This podcast brought to you by Hope 103.2.
This is episode 26 with singer, dancer and actor Barry Conrad.
Power Lunch with Laura Bennett.
Hello, welcome to the Power Lunch podcast. I'm Laura Bennett, radio host, writer, movie lover and curious human being. Each week we speak with creative thinkers in our world, helping us understand and shape our culture in a positive way. Conrad has been in the entertainment industry for over a decade now. You might remember him from Australian Idol with his great voice and fantastic fro, or X Factor on stage in Violet, Madiba, the Hairspray and Grease Arena spectaculars. More recently, he's now on Neighbours. But in this conversation, we talk about the big audition that he ditched, how to reject selfishness in an industry that can so often be self-absorbed, and his near-death experience. But first, we jump back right to the beginning and find out where his love for music began.
Wow, that's going back now. My parents are both quite musical. So my father plays guitar and sings. My mom recorded an album with her church choir back in the day. So I was always around music, but it was really just sort of a thing. It was natural. It wasn't anything that I thought of as a serious career until much later on. And then and then I joined a singing dancing group called Jara in New Zealand. They're a bit more like a Christian type group. Mm. And then we moved to Australia, and then the rest is history, really.
Yeah, and it's a pretty cool history. But to make it a career that actually is what you live and breathe and get to do professionally is quite different from just having an interest and liking it. So how did you know that you could and you wanted to step into it full time?
You know what? I always wanted to do it full time, but again, you stand in front of your own way sometimes. And for the longest time, that's what I did. I didn't have the confidence to do it until much later on. But I think the catalyst for it was, I guess, to really think about it seriously was when I did X Factor, which is much, much later. Before that, I was working as a songwriter and a background vocalist professionally already, but not quite in the forefront doing my own thing. Mm. And then X Factor really, at that time, I was a perfect storm of all kinds of crazy things. I lost my second mom to cancer. I was at a bit of a crossroads of what I wanted to do with my career and my life. And that was the catalyst for me going, you know what? It cracked something inside me. And ever since then, I've evolved and stepped more into myself, had more of a platform to use to do that. Mm. And really started building from that point in a very serious way. But it's been a long process. It's not like an overnight thing. It's, it's ups and downs. And I've been really low and really high and everything in between as well.
So, yeah, it's never as easy as some people make it look, but finding confidence, that is a huge part for not just yourself, but surely every artist, I would think. What was it that gave you confidence? Because so many of us deal with that, not knowing whether we can do the thing we really want to.
You're right. I think ever since I was a child, I've always had this sort of resilience, and that sounds really corny, but it's true. I've always believed that there's something more, like a bit of a higher achiever, but also have that quote-unquote faith that, you know, things will work out. Mm. But I've always never been afraid of working hard, and I think that's something that it's a quality that I'm proud of having, and I always tell people, don't be afraid to work hard because it's not just going to happen, and nothing just gets handed to you. But the confidence comes with you making decisions that are conducive to where you want to go, and then with each decision, you get more and more confident, and confidence spurs confidence and breeds confidence. But, you know, it doesn't mean that I don't have days where I feel like, oh, can I do this? You know, there's definitely moments where you constantly feel that, regardless of where you're at, can I do it again? Can I do this? Can I hit that note? Can I write that song? Can I do this scene? Can I nail this in front of all these people? What will people think? All these things, you know?
Yeah, so it's not necessarily a thing that you choose and you have forever. It's something you've constantly got to keep choosing, confidence.
Keep choosing it, and also have people around you that won't just stroke your ego, but constructively build you. And at the same time, encourage you when you win, like, you know, celebrate with you when you do win.
It's actually a really good reminder, particularly for yourself. You mentioned X Factor. I remember when you went on Australian Idol years ago and you're literally the fro, the whole lot. I was there. But I remember, like, some of the things that people say to you on the show, they're nitpicking your appearance, they're nitpicking your vocal style. To say yes, not only once, but twice to do something like that is pretty huge. Why would you put yourself in a position where you're being analysed like that?
You know what? You're completely right. And after that happened, I swore that I would never do something like that again because, you know what, Laura, it was hard after that particular first experience because I developed so much anxiety. I was already a much different person than I am now. I was a lot more of a people pleaser, a lot more of a perfectionist, a lot more self-conscious. So that experience made me so anxious. Mm. For example, I would go to a movie and leave before the lights came up and things like that. I'd wow. just be constantly thinking, people are watching me, what are they going to think? It really ruled me. And so after that, it took a long time to defragment and sort of go, I'm never doing that again. But what made me go back into that was at that time, I said my second mom, Audrey, I lost her to cancer at that time. But before that, she said, go for it. You have one life. She was in a bad way. She said, make the most of it. Go for it, Barry, go for it. And I was like, all these different signs were pointing towards me doing it. I was like, I'm at a crossroads. I'm just going to give it one last shot. But the funny thing is I missed my audition date. I didn't actually turn up. I actually didn't turn up. And then I was driving home from the studio one night and that Coldplay song, Fix You, came on. And I've heard that song 1,000 times. Mm. But that lyric that said, if you never try, you'll never know just what you're worth. That particular lyric at that moment just made me pull over on the side of the road. And I was like, okay, I'm going to call the producers, see if they can still see me. And then they flew me out on the very final day of that Melbourne tour in Australia, the very final day. And that's what happened. But it was terrifying. It was absolutely terrifying to be put myself in front of that. I was older. I was like, hadn't been in the game, as a performer as much. I was like, can I even do this? Mm. It was hard.
Were you proud of how much you'd grown? Because stepping back on that stage must have felt so different the second time, being just older, but also so mm-hmm. much more, with so much more life experience under your belt.
I was. I didn't have a chance to think about how much I'd grown at that point, but I had grown a lot more. I had more confidence in my voice, certainly. And I was hoping, like, come on, like, I've got experience. You better pay off now, because, the last however many years it's been. It was also really cool to see fellow peers that I'd known for a while as well. We sort of supported each other through that experience. So that was cool.
Yeah, and the show obviously believed in you to fly you out. But I love that a Coldplay lyric influenced part of your decision, as well as your mum, Audrey. That is incredible. As an artist, particularly to think, wow, the lyrics of this song made me do something different. Do you ever think about that for your own creations and songs that you write?
Absolutely. I mean, that's the dream, I think, for any songwriter who is listening to this right now. They'll be like, of course you want your songs to impact someone in a positive way or to inspire people. I guess you don't think about that when you're writing it, but you definitely hope that that would happen. And I want to do that with my music as well, for sure. I mean, I'd heard that song a billion times and it's never really impacted me in the same way. But that moment in life, it's funny how music can just speak to you so powerfully.
Yeah, you hear the right song at the right time. And over the years that you've been in the industry, I really admire the way that you just keep showing up, taking gigs, you keep breaking ground on the stage, in movies, whatever it might be. But to get consistent work as an actor, a singer, a songwriter, like, that is hard. So what is it that keeps you going and just keeps you knocking on doors?
First of all, thank you. I really appreciate that. You know what it is? I've had this killer instinct, and I said this before, like, that resilience, and that's what I had to use when I had nothing. For example, when Jara broke up, I was like, well, we moved to Australia. That was, like, the dream, and now, like, we're broken up. What do I do? Mm. And it was, like, had no money, had nothing, and I had to be resourceful, and ever since then, I just really kept that and, like, not taking no for an answer, obviously within wisdom, not just, like, harassing people, but just, like, really backing yourself, being confident in who you are. And a lot of people just aren't used to persistence as much. So that really just taught me a valuable lesson in business now, as a businessman, that, persistence is great. And I've really learned so much about that. And it reinforces that it's possible. Because I've done it before, that I can do it again. And now that I've, for example, doing Neighbours now and all these different things, it's like, yep, that's another sign. Keep going, keep going, keep going. And that's what gives me that drive to keep on going and pushing to that next level, because I want so much more as well.
you just got to stick with the daily consistency and daily disciplines, I suppose. Mm-hmm. And having been able to now call yourself a qualified singer, actor, dancer, it's quite incredible. Mm. But there's a time when you arrive on set, when you're just starting out, where you've got enough qualifications to get the gig, but then you're also kind of new. It's your first time on a TV set or first time on a stage. How do you balance the tension between being expected to be great because you got the job, but also actually learning your craft and giving yourself those opportunities to make mistakes and grow?
Oh, wow, that's a great question. Well, first of all, it's scary. It's very, you do it afraid, even if, when it is afraid, scary. But I'd say with stage and theater, for example, my very first theater show is called Violet. It was a small little show here at the Hayes in Sydney and Chapel in Melbourne. That was terrifying because I had to not be Barry Conrad. And that was a huge learning curve for me, and more than even professional, as a personal lesson, is like, get over who you think you should be. Because the director, he annihilated me. I love Mitchell Buteel so much because he really just shook me out of myself. Like, stop being Barry. Stop being Barry Conrad. Stop looking for the angle. Stop trying to look pretty. Just be the character. Get ugly, get vulnerable. And growing as an actor has really helped me to grow as a person and as a singer-songwriter as well, because you have to connect more to yourself and to real emotion. So that's one lesson. And I took that onto the stage in me, and that's really evolved and helped me to grow. So now when I can go into screen acting, for example, I'm able to trust myself a bit more, to trust that people will hopefully see what I'm feeling without me having to indicate, which means to act. Just be, like, connect to the moment. And that, in turn, helps me to connect when I'm writing songs or on stage now so much more, because I'm not just doing it, not that I was doing it from a vanity point before, but in hindsight, it's like, wow, you grow, you keep growing, you know. So you find a new normal, and then you keep building on that new normal. But a practical example for Neighbours, I was the rookie in that situation. I am the rookie because I've never been in a network television show before, so I'm learning, even though I got the gig and whatever, that's great. But I'm constantly looking around me, taking notes, because I thrive on direction. I thrive on people giving me advice and stuff, and it's so exciting being at this point in my career in a new position that I'm not used to, and that's so exhilarating, I can't even explain. But yeah, I'm learning so much as I go, and there's so much more to learn.
It's such a funny, like, mess of experiences and emotions, because you've got to be really trusting of the people around you and be confident enough to be vulnerable. Like, it's a bit mind-bending to just imagine how to really do that well. And the industry itself requires you to believe you're good and to almost be really selfish in a way, because you've got to put yourself out there. You've got to believe you can do it. Like, you can't shy away from some behaviors that others would look at and think that's so self-absorbed, but it's kind of just part of the gig. How do you personally, as someone we know to be really philanthropic and really caring of others, how do you manage the nature of an industry that is pretty self-absorbed and not getting too caught up in that?
Now, how do I answer this question? I do have people around me that you know, pull me up if, you know, like, pull your head and get over yourself. You know, not that that often gets told to me, but I have people around me that help me keep me grounded. I also think it's important to, I tell people this more now, and that is, find other things in your life that make you happy, not just what your work does. Because if you just put everything into your work, it can be so consuming, or like, I can't even articulate how much. Like, it's all encompassing, because if you think about it, all day I'm thinking about myself.
Yeah.
Meaning, like, the lines I've got to learn, the interviews I've got to do, the artwork I've got to choose. Even though it's work, like, it's me. So I'm constantly, my world revolves around me. So if I'm honest about that, then I can go, cool, great. So let me put boundaries in my life that, you know, I can shut myself away from that, because otherwise I'm constantly just focused on myself. Even though I'm not thinking about, yeah, I'm just, you know, focused on me. It's all about me. That's not the mindset, but the reality is I am. Everything has to do with my, you know, my look, my face, my voice, my acting. So to not get caught up in that, I'm not going to lie, it's not easy, because you can sort of become used to your own little bubble, you know, because it is a bit of a bubble being in entertainment. It's very much about what we're doing, what the next project is and things like that. And, you know, there's a lot of ego that comes with that and stuff as well. I would say I am philanthropic and I do think I'm a kind person and whatnot. In business, I am actually quite, you know, I'm a go-getter. I'm ambitious. You know, that can maybe come across as cocky, but I am confident. But there is a fine line between confidence and arrogance. So I try to make sure that I try to be mindful about it. But I'm sure that to some people I come across cocky. To some people I come across really humble. But I can't control people's opinions. You know what I mean? Like, whatever.
Yeah, and it's true.
What are you going to do?
Yeah, I mean, your business is your brand. So it is just it is just how it works. But do you think that's why so many celebrities, singers, whoever it might be, they choose to do, to support different causes, to be the face of different social brands, for instance, because that is something that turns the attention away from them at least a little bit?
I think so. I mean, I'd like to think so. I know for myself, definitely, because I think with anything, it's about, you know, you receive, but it's important to give back, you know, whether that's, you know, financially to a charity or a cause, or even just lending your time and volunteering, whether it's a soup kitchen or community, you know, festival or something like Are You Okay, which I am a proud ambassador of. Like, you know, it's important to give back of yourself and not just take in. I don't think, I don't know, it sounds really kind of spiritual to say, but I don't think we're designed to just keep taking in. I feel like it's important to give as well, you know?
Yeah, and I mean, mental health is a huge thing within all industries, but, and I mean, just socially, it doesn't even have to be a professional thing, but you in the entertainment industry, how have you seen the importance of caring for your own and others' mental health really play out?
In our industry, particularly the mental health, it's pretty dire, the situation. You know, there's a lot of suicide happening. Depression, you know, rates are just at an all-time high over here in our industry. So it's really, it's a funny thing because every single one of my peers that I have this chat with will agree that perception is so interesting because people look at Instagram or TV or magazines and stuff like that and, you know, they can think everything is great because you're quote-unquote succeeding, but that is your job. It's not who you are. You know, and so it's important to really separate the two. It's not the same thing. So it's really important to not forget to ask people, how are you? Not just, oh, I know you're doing well because I saw that you got that gig. No. Like, yeah, that's not real. Like for example, you could, you know, get a promotion tomorrow and you might ask me, oh, Barry, how's it going? I said, oh, good. I know you're doing well. You got the promotion. Well, that's actually not true because, yeah, you did get that promotion, but I didn't ask you how you were.
Yeah, right.
So it's important to catch myself as well and never assume someone's okay. I mean, it's just being mindful about that because it's such a huge issue.
And I guess, it does take people like yourself, all of us, being aware that so many people grow up in an era where social media is normal because it's all people have known, teaching people that distinction of what is reality and what is isolated moments that they can be highlights, they can be really vulnerable posts, but it's realizing that's not the 24/7 reality of whoever it is that's posting that Instagram picture or whatever.
Exactly right.
There's so much more. And talking about identity, we know that you're a man of faith. We know that that's important to you. How do you make sure that your identity isn't so wrapped up in your work and still is found in something outside of yourself?
I think it's important for me to start the day not just looking at my phone. You know, it's something really practical that I can share with you guys. Is something as simple as when I wake up in the morning, making sure that I'm taking time to feed my soul and to center myself and be grateful for what I have, rather than roll over, check my Instagram or, you know, respond to a business email or something like that. Like, you know, if you just get on that train day by day after, you know, before you know it, you're going to look back and go, wow, okay, so much has changed. And I could have changed that by making better choices.
Right.
Because I think we become creatures of habit, you know, I am anyway.
So it's kind of like widening out your horizons. Oh, I'm totally a creature of habit. What's funny is I'll make the decision not to check my phone in the morning or not to check my phone at night and then catch myself doing it. And then I personally make a decision to think, what is this giving me, and what am I giving it? And then if I don't like that equation, then I call it quits. And I totally unfollow people who don't make me feel good, because I'm like, I actually have the control to say follow, unfollow, and no matter who it is, if it's like, if you're not adding something to the conversation, it's like, you're gone.
Yeah, I think that's good. Like, you got to be ruthless with the following, unfollowing button, because, like, same. Like, I've, like, sort of called my the people that I follow as well. And it's funny how people take that personally too, but it's like, you got to protect yourself, protect your mental health, protect your spirit. Mm. If they're not putting out what you need to be seeing for yourself, then why open up your eye gates to that? Why expose yourself to that?
Yeah, but you can also use it really powerfully too. Like, I remember a couple of years ago, I was doing like a 10K running event, which was, that was a big deal for me. I'm not necessarily the person who would do that. And I started following Bear Grylls because I'm like, I need motivation and Bear Grylls will make me feel like I can do anything. So you can also use it to surround you with the voices you need for certain seasons, not just like get rid of everybody.
Yeah. Yeah, we're not trying to say get rid of everybody you follow, everyone, whoever's listening to this. I agree with you, Laura.
Yeah.
Same here. Like, I have people that make me feel cheered up and make me feel like I can do what I've got to do, so that's good.
Yeah, so thank you, Bear Grylls, for getting me across the finish line. But
Bear Grylls.
Yep, he's the one.
That's impressive, by the way. That's really impressive that you...
Thank you. Now I feel like my next goal should be a marathon, but I'm highly unsure of how that would actually play out. But
how many Ks is a marathon again?
That's like 42. So,
holy moly. Okay.
I mean, who chooses to do those things? It's stupid.
Well, you might be doing it soon, so you might be one of those people.
Hey, 2020, start the new decade with a big goal, maybe. But
let's go.
From something, I mean, hey, I love having fun. We're chatting about that. That's awesome. So it's going to sound a little funny for me to flip it and ask you this question, but you have mentioned losing your mum, and that's tough, obviously. And a couple of years ago, you had your own brush with illness, with blood clot,
definitely,
which you can talk a little bit more about if you like. But in both those situations, you're face-to-face with mortality, which is not kind for anyone. We all know what's going to happen, but it's always rough when it feels close. How has that influenced your own perspective on life, on your career, and everything around that?
Man, you're really good, aren't you? These are great questions. It's affected everything, Laura, every single thing, because it really, it sucks that it takes things like that to make people, you know, embrace life more and whatnot, but it really does happen. And for me, Audrey was the first, you know, losing my second mom, Audrey, to cancer really broke something in me. I always say it was like a catalyst for, you know, embracing life more, living life to the fullest. And then when I came really, really close to KOing myself, the doctor actually told me, he said, if you weren't as fit as you are and healthy, you would not be here right now. You know, it was such a slim chance that of survival, because I had that blood clot shoot up to my right lung, and I have 1.5 lungs, which is crazy. And I had to rehab my entire everything. I thought, could I still sing? I couldn't speak without going, let alone sing, let alone run, let alone work out again. It was like my whole life's going to change. So it definitely made me, again, lean into more of who I am. Without sounding corny, just hear my heart when I say this, but just embrace life so much more, and just knowing that there's no guarantees. Like, there really isn't. Like, you'd never know. And that's why now it informs the way I live. It informs the way, as practical as when I meet people, making the most of that moment. Like, you know, don't just make it a blah beige moment. Like, ask them how they are, you know. Have a laugh, you know, make the most of that when I'm on set, giving it everything I've got when I'm in the gym, giving it everything I've got, just valuing each moment and being present, showing up, like you said before. Mm. It's made me show up in life so much more, and it's a constant reminder, because I still have reminders physically that my capacity's changed, and then it keeps me in check. Cool, remember that moment? Mm. Don't forget that, so keep living. Like, it's informed everything, and it's changed everything in the way that I look at life and how mortality is, you know, we're all going to die one day, and it's important to just live. And as easy said and done than it is, like, don't care as much what people think, because at the end of the day, you're on your own deathbed. So you got to, like, live your life, be proud of that life, you know, make sure that you're filling that life with things that you love and you want to do. Your dreams, your goals, go for it, you know, your relationships, whatever it is, just go for it.
Yeah, it narrows your focus by the sound of it. And does it make you, like, because I feel like for anyone who has a major life event, it's either something that they think about every single day as like they keep it in their present consciousness and make different decisions because of it, or it's something that like impacts them and then there's kind of these like aftermath default decisions that then just start to trickle into their life and they don't necessarily connect the two. For you, is it something you like you wake up and you say, hey, this happened to me, so I'm going to make these decisions, or do you feel like it's now you're just living in the habits that have come because of it?
Definitely the latter. Like I definitely don't wake up and go, remember what happened, because it's just at this point, it's informed my habits and decisions now. Of course, I was thinking about that right afterwards, but it's a constant reminder in the back of my mind, but it's not something that I have to put on or remember because it's always there.
Right.
And now my habits and, it's informed by that moment.
It's a huge life experience that you've had in so many different ways as we look back on the last decade and coming up to a brand new one. Is there anything that you would change about the journey so far as you head into the 2020s?
I could say yes, but then I could also go, if I'm one of those people who goes, if this didn't happen, would this not have happened? You know what I mean? Mm. So in saying that, it's like I don't regret anything that's happened this past decade. If anything, this decade has been, wow, colourful. And definitely, literally, and I don't like to use the word literally a lot because people go literally, life-changing. It's changed the direction of my life, but I believe in such a great way. And honestly, I feel so happy, and I'm the happiest that I've been at this point in my life than I've ever been. Honestly, I can say that. And yeah. I'm so excited, and I'm hungrier and more driven and more just excited about life than ever before. And I'm so excited about the next decade because I feel like I finished this year strong, finishing the year strong, and bring on what's next. So excited.
Hey, Barry, it's been awesome chatting with you. I so appreciate you taking the time, and all the best for next year as well.
Thank you so much, and this has been genuinely such a good chat, so thank you.
And that is it for this week's Power Lunch. Thank you for listening. Would love for you to subscribe, rate it, share it with your friends, and let me know what you think. Until next time, see you later.
Thanks for listening. Start your day with Life Words. Subscribe to Hope 1032's free daily email devotional at hope1032.com.au.